The talk this evening is called Opening Our Heart to Love. There are moments in our lives when we have the great fortune, I think, to be touched by one person or even a group of beings whose actions are clearly manifesting an expression of wisdom and love. And I think that is really inspiring. And I'd like to share this way of manifesting love often emerges from the space of depth of openness when we're faced with great suffering. Love that allows that suffering in a way. And I'd like to share for myself a moment which has truly been deeply moving on my spiritual path. And that is in 1980-82, in the early 1980s, I can't exactly remember which year, we went with my husband to Dharamsala, and we had the great fortune then to meet the Dalai Lama, who was then not yet famous as he is today, to have a private audience with him. And it was clearly a manifestation of love that was expressing itself. When we first appeared to him, it was so amazingly moving to feel his presence, his total presence within himself, to just open his door to us. And the reason why we had met with him was to know if it was good for us to lead groups to Tibet. My husband Charles was leading groups in Tibet then, and 20 or so more years ago, we had not the idea of what the Dalai Lama's thought was about around that. It wasn't public. And he said, well, of course, this is really very important that people from outside come and see what is happening in our country, and the Tibetans must really have a sense of noticing and knowing their foreigners. And so we were quite moving, and it was interesting to see that from the space of his heart, he just opened up and told the way that he had left Tibet. And his eyes became full of tears. In just one moment, his way of being, his face shifted totally, and he opened within the space of his heart just to remember what had happened to him. And yet, his tears were held in the space of love. There was space, there was love, and there were tears. But the next moment, there was laughter. And he just switched it, and he said, well, I probably think that you want a picture with you and I. Don't you want a picture of the Dalai Lama and you on our side? And, of course, what we had wished, you know, we thought, of course, it'd be great, but we didn't have the camera because we didn't think that that could be possible. And he said, well, you know, I'm full of meetings tomorrow, but you can come in between meetings. Come with your camera tomorrow and we'll take a picture. That openness, just to be there, present with what was. And we did go the next day, and he did make the space to take a picture, which we still have, of course. What a beautiful way of just manifesting openness in each moment and thinking of the other rather than thinking of oneself. So for me, it was really quite moving and really very touching to see that there is a path that can lead to that state of being. And in fact, I was so moved that the next day when we met and we took that picture, I said, but, you know, I bowed to him and I said, but how is it? How can I be, you know, like you are? Just, and he said, well, you've just got to practice. Practice does it. And I thought, oh, you know, I was very new. I didn't have any retreats then. I thought, if there's a practice, then it's possible for everyone to do and to be on a path like this. And this is exactly what we're here for, what we're doing to manifest what the Dalai Lama so profoundly manifested then. The Buddha said that, in a way, the greatest protection in all the world is loving kindness. It is a protection when we have it really within ourselves. We can feel that it's true when we're able to meet the moment with love, with kindness. Then we really feel protected. It's also a way that when we're faced with pain, then in a way metta, or loving kindness, or compassion, can be a refuge, a true refuge. And some of us can really sense this very naturally. We have this sense of opening ourselves to our pain and feel that there is a sense of refuge when we open rather than close up. Unfortunately, for other people, it's much more difficult. You know, just the idea to open, to have to allow the pain in, is far more difficult. It's just so difficult to imagine even that state of being. It's far away from where I am right now. And that's exactly why it was so impressive. I was so impressed by the Dalai Lama's presence and wholeness of being, because in my early years of practice, afterwards, I really resisted a lot the practice of metta, of compassion. It was not at all easy for me to go into my pain. There was a lot of pain, but it seemed that the willingness was to hold on to the pain. It felt like there was no way that I could imagine a path that could make me see that looking at it within myself and looking at my pain would actually free me from pain. So there was much more holding and attachment to that feeling. And really, a teacher said, you know, you should really do metta practice. This is not going to work if you're really hard on yourself. And doing vipassana at times, when really the circumstances, the conditions are difficult, we can harden, and really metta is so helpful. And I said, no, no way, I don't want to do metta, and really refused to open up in a way. And so he said, well, okay, don't do metta if you have a lot of resistance to metta. It's not a problem. But then just within your practice of vipassana, just hold your heart as if it were a newborn baby. And I said, well, that I can do. Hold my heart as if it were a newborn baby. That's possible. And, you know, just the image of the baby I liked. So that was really quite okay to take in. And what I noticed was that what he was offering was an act of metta. It was really one way of really being kind to myself, to really receive that baby within myself and to hold it, to hold myself in another way than hurting myself. And in fact, it was a clever teacher, because really years later I noticed that I was doing metta then already, you know, even if it wasn't the formal, but it was just a way to step in. And then, of course, it was much easier for me to use the phrases. And then an opening happened. Something shifted then. So when you have moments of resistance, just think about, you know, it's possible to hold oneself tenderly, just as we are tenderly touching a newborn baby. How do we care? And that is possible when this is happening. It's easy to think of loving kindness in the beginning as being a practice that really feels unnatural, and that's why I had not the possibility of touching it, because it felt like it was fake to me to just repeat those phrases. But that's because we don't have the sense of what this practice brings. And so we really have a sense of not being at home when we are practicing. Our home is usually our habitual tendencies of fear, of closing down, of being really totally separated in a way from the pain when it is coming. So when one is able to practice metta and to really open up, we can see that, we can understand that manifesting the metta is really a way that we can reach ourselves and take care of ourselves with kindness, with openness. This allows the difficult mind states to open. It is said that the nature of metta is to reteach a thing its loveliness. Just to reteach a thing its loveliness. Because really, the nature of metta is our true home. The fact that our nature of mind and heart are, in a way, totally pure. The defilements, the hindrances, what we call aversion, greed, hatred, they are just the visitors, they're passing visitors. And when we can sense one moment of kindness, one moment when we can truly sense this nature of being at home and have this feeling of purity, of the mind that is not tainted by any greed, hatred, or delusion, then there is a moment of wholesome. There's really something that is totally wholesome within us. And that is the way that we plant the seed. That's why it's called one of the beautiful states of the mind, accompanied with the others that are compassion, sympathetic joy, and also equanimity. Those states cannot be associated with the unwholesome. There's no way that we can have one moment of wholesome in the same time as a moment of unwholesome. So metta is in this way really being a friend to ourselves. It's really this basic goodness, this generosity of the heart that spontaneously offers itself to us when we reach to it, when we allow it to come in. But often also we wonder, but what does this state feel like? What is it? How? And I'm sure you all do today, you know, what the moments when, what is that state of metta? Well, genuine metta is a state of tranquility. It's really a state of calm abiding. It's a little bit like, I love the image of the gentle rain that comes at the end of the day when we've had really, you know, a good day at the hot sun. And this gentle rain really comes very, very, very swiftly. It just touches us and it gives some freshness. The state of metta is very cool. It's not fiery. It's not warm-like. And therefore, what happens then is that the mind and the heart really soften, they relax. Rather than being reactive, we become receptive, we become open. And what happens also is that we become non-judgmental. One of the characteristics of that state is to really be non-judgmental in any way. Rather than incline the mind to criticism or to judgment, this state of mind can really open to anything that is arising, whatever it is, pleasant or unpleasant. It won't matter. We do that when we connect with the phrases. This is how we really plant the seed of that state of genuine metta. We become more concentrated, the body is more stable, more steady, the mind more collected, and we become simply more present, and it enables this state to flourish. The important thing is not to look for it. When we want the state of metta to come and to reach us, and I'm sure that many, many moments today, you know, we're looking for that state of metta because we're giving so much attention to generating metta feelings, and we wish a result. To notice that. Sometimes we think of metta as being exactly the opposite of suffering, of pain. Pain is intense. So we think that it's exactly the opposite, but on the positive side. And therefore, metta is something that is intense. We're so used to intensity in our habitual forms of living that we can miss the moment when metta is present. Metta is not intense. It's probably exactly the opposite. When there's a state of excitement, of extreme enthusiasm, this is not metta. It's the close neighbor, which we've been talking about and which I'll talk a little bit about tonight. It's this state of desire. The fiery, the intensity that we're looking for is a state that we know well, which is desire. Desire is the close neighbor of metta. And love and desire really need to be distinguished at this point, because they're actually really two opposite states. Even if they're very close, they're totally opposite. What happens is that desire brings more pain. When there's desire, inevitably, at one moment or another, there's going to be pain at the end. With metta, Loving kindness is exactly the opposite. Loving kindness can only bring peace and harmony. It brings a sense of wholeness, of collectedness, of non-separation. And that's quite opposite. So there's a big difference between the two. Even though they may look similar to you right now, they're quite opposite. They look similar because in a way there's also pleasure in both. You know, when there is desire and we have some state of desire because we've been wanting something and we can get it, there's pleasure there. But it's not a pleasure that is held within a state that can last. It's a pleasure that's quite temporary. And the desire is exactly this. There's always some wanting, always some neediness. At one point or another, there's going to be something that's going to be lacking when we're in a state of desire. It's quite easy to see. If there's something that we like, we just want more of it. Right? The satisfaction is never enough. Never enough. I just want more. Whatever it is. And that feeling of wanting more is very painful. Or the desire can manifest in a way that it wants what it doesn't have. That's exactly the opposite way. We're looking for something that's not here, that's not present. So therefore there's wanting, there's desire. A basic way to see this in your practice here, I think, very useful and to come back to, is that when there's wanting, there's really that leaning forward. It's even you can feel it in the body. Very, very easy to feel that there's this reaching out, you know, this mode of the mind, ooh, just everything's okay, you're saying your phrases, it's perfect, one moment, may I be safe, you know, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I live with ease. And then just the next moment, oh yeah, but if only, you know, I would feel that ease. If only I would feel that happiness. Just wanting. It just shifted from that non-judgmental attention to just a wanting. And it can happen in a split second that we're just off. To notice it. To notice the energy in the body. To notice that leaning out, that reaching out in the mind. It really can shift quite instantly. From everything's okay, I'm sitting here, I'm perfectly fine with what's happening, to suddenly the mind shifts into something and it wants. And we can really, as we're paying attention and getting more concentrated, we can notice how painful it is, that reaching out. Just to notice it, no need to judge it. And in that way, it is a way of manifesting metta. That metta as an attention, the non-judgmental attention, that act of kindness to that feeling of wanting, is in a way connecting with kindness to what is happening. Often when we have a desire, we're going to have the wish to get rid of this desire. We're going to really wish another state to come in. So it's not to want another state, not push it away. The desire, there's no way that we can push it away. But just to notice it and see what happens. When we connect again, well, we'll see that we're again present and we can reconnect with the actual practice. A few years ago, I was so happy to be able to do a 6-week retreat of metta. It was just like something that I had hoped for a long time, had been doing a lot of vipassana, and by then, I was really happy to do metta because doing short retreats like you, I really wished to have a longer one, really feeling the benefit from it. And so, very happy to be looking for that period of practice, really motivated, plenty of good intention, and began my practice. And after 2 or 3 days, you know, it was interesting because the motivation from the good intention, just placing my mind on the phrases, quickly shifted to this huge wanting that of course I did not notice right away. And it seemed like a wholesome wanting, because in a way that wanting was only manifesting in a way that I wished to do my practice better. I wanted to do the best I could. But there was wanting there. Doing the best one can with the best of intention and having the intention to do it, but then focusing on the phrases and letting the practice unfold as it unfolds, shifted to something where there was a desire for something that I was looking as a result out of my practice, feeling more metta, looking for something other than just what was happening then. And of course, after 3 days, I think you noticed probably that, well, there wasn't, you know, such comfort in metta, and it was not that spacious, you know. I think that after 2 or 3 days, it's quite the contrary. We're seeing more manifestation, for some of us at least, of difficulty, because we're just being present. So there is a manifestation, and it's normal, a natural way that we connect with what we don't like about ourselves. It's just appearing more. But it's not a mistake. It's not that we're not doing the practice right, or it's not that we're not being good. It's just that we're purifying ourselves. We're purifying ourselves from the defilement. And it's that purity, that purification that is happening that allows us to deepen the practice and to allow metta to emerge. So it was really nothing special that was happening to me, but in a way it took a while, and really it's the teacher who said, but you know, rather than just, you know, wishing for something else to happen, why don't you just enjoy doing the practice? Just enjoy sending yourself phrases. Enjoy the fact of sending other people, your good friend, the benefactor, phrases out. And I thought, hey, enjoy. That word had completely disappeared from my sight. And so it was just so wonderful to connect. And I think that it's also a huge part of the practice, is that one needs to remember when there are difficult times or there are difficult moments, that we're also here to take joy in the practice. And it's a huge part of the opening of the heart to remember that we can really, in a way, enjoy, and it's that enjoyment that will allow that relaxation, the softening of the body and of the heart and mind. So I was able to do that a while, and then I moved on to the dear friend, just like you did today. And as I was sending my phrases to the dear friend, you know, may you be happy, may you be safe, and, you know, over and over again, sending the phrases. And then suddenly my mind came, oh, I wonder if she's feeling this metta, you know? Is she really getting it? I'm sending all this metta to her, and do you think that it's really affecting something in her, you know? Do you think she's receiving it? And again, that time, you know, what happens then? Well, we'll notice that we're wanting a result. We're wanting our friend to receive the metta feeling. Quite normal. This is our habitual way of seeing things, of relating to the things that we know so well. So to know, oh, there was a desire, there was a wanting. It's not an intention. It's not to get, it gets us out of the moment when that desire, that moment of reaching out, wanting, wondering about if the other person gets it or doesn't get it. It's not about that. It's just to stay at the sense of planting the seed. So we get hooked so many times, get caught so many times into desires. But it's okay. And I think it's never a mistake if we see it. Because this is what we're going to face, all of us. And it's important to see the joy in seeing those defilements. After some time of practice, it becomes really wonderful, actually, to learn to see and to understand what is happening and how we get caught in our minds. How our habits really, you know, catch us. And it's a perfect place because here there's quietness, there's no sense of communication with other people. This is really the place where we can see much more clearly what our mind is inhabited with, you know. What's the tendency of the mind? Where is it going? Is it the far enemy? Is there aversion? Or is it the near enemy? Is there desire? Whatever it is, to welcome it and not get caught. Very slowly, we move, it shifts to something which can change. What I noticed within my practice is often this sense of separation. It's like the mind, all the thinking, the conceptual mind, really, for myself at least, wants to conquer the heart. There's the sense of one part of oneself really wanting to conquer the other. And then, of course, it creates more suffering in the sense that there's fighting. There's really not much integration when this is happening. So over and over again, even if we think that when we're practicing metta today, tonight, tomorrow, and we wish to do our best, yes, of course, it's wonderful to wish to do our best and to place our best intention, but to really remember that when we're trying too hard to get somewhere or to get something, that is the force of desire that is running through us, that's running the show. And when we notice that, just to drop it. Just to see it for what it is, and then come back gently to the phrases and to the practice. This is how we'll, in a way, play with the practice. There will be much more lightness of heart, in a way. And also a lot much more joy. When we have that sense of self-referencing, it can be self-doubt, or self-judgment, or self-hatred, or whatever it is that I want, where there's an I in there, and most of the time there is one. When I is so present and takes the whole picture, it's important not to pretend that it's not there. I feel this way. Well, to see it. You know, we can be really repeating our phrases and be on an automatic pilot and have this whole story going in the background, you know, and pretend it's not there. Right? I don't know if it's happened to you today, but, you know, we can really have two modes turning and just pretend that nothing's happening in the background. Well, I think it's important not to pretend that there's nothing happening there. It's okay to feel that there's a story going on. Drop the phrases then and just check what is it that is happening in the background. If there's a strong desire, if there's a fantasy that, you know, came and there's a picture of someone that we like, or suddenly a desire that manifests as lust, or whatever it is, that a body shake, or whatever it is that is appearing, just notice, oh, lust, what's present? Feel it, and then let it go, rather than just letting it linger in there. Noticing, and then just letting go. That's how we reconnect with the practice. That sense of connection is metta, again. When we connect with the story, if there's a story going on, and pretend it's not there, then we're nowhere. We're not with the phrases, and we're not with the story. So it's really two ways that we're really not connecting. There's a sense of disconnection. And so the connection needs to be where it is happening, which what is appearing in the present. Two big ways that of feeling the wanting that one can notice arise, it's really manifesting probably in all of us. One way is really the feeling of wanting more metta. that feeling of I want more metta. I just want the metta to be present. Looking for results. Having that sense of expectation, notice the expectation. And the second one is to be with the practice in order for it to change. You know, I'll be with these phrases. I'll let myself do the metta practice. But there's a sense of bargaining. There's a sense of not really being present with what is, but in a sense wanting something back. You know, I'll be with that if I get something back. And again, there's a neediness there. I noticed that again in that 6 weeks of metta retreat when I have a friend that is quite ill, and I was really wishing that my metta would help this friend. Of course, very wholesome wish, and with the best of intention, I was, you know, sending the phrases, may you become healthy again, and may you not be ill, and really sending these phrases with a lot of careful attention. And after I had finished, you know, heard this person was not well at all and was clearly not going on the right side, I mean, not going on the positive side of things. And the first thing that came to mind was like, oh, what did I do wrong? You know, what did I do wrong that he's not better? There was no mistake. It's not that we need to have some kind of reach that the person, maybe the person will be better, maybe not. And this is not what it's about. It's opening the heart. And when I met that person, it was a huge, huge openness from my side to care for her and to take care of her as she was ill. Much more present in her presence. And that was the metta. That was the result, in a way. Not wishing for some ideal, but being much more open and present and just, you know, enabling life to unfold as it was supposed to unfold for her. Not interfere. So in that way, metta is really a true offering. This is why we say that it is a gift. It's really an open hand. It's this open hand. And when there's desire, this hand will open, but it's just going to do this again, you know? It's this gesture, and then it's going to close back again and take. And I think it's so clear to see the difference. Simple offering, may you be happy, may I be happy. Just be happy, simple. What it requires is that we be honest to ourselves. If we cultivate loving kindness, then of course we will be helped along the path. And there are many virtues in doing this practice. And I'd like to quote the Buddha, who says that one who actively develops loving kindness mindfully, which is what we're doing here, and without limit, sees that their attachments wane and their bonds become one thing. If one shows kindness with a clear mind, even once for living creatures, by that one moment of kindness, one becomes wholesome. By that one moment of kindness, one becomes wholesome. Having mercy in his or her heart for all creatures, the noble person brings forth abundant goodness. That one moment of kindness is what makes us wholesome. Just that. It's really quite powerful to reflect on the power of the practice, the power of the metta. And in that way, it's important that we reflect also on the good moments, on the moments when we've had a sense of that quality being present. We often overlook those moments, you know, so habituated by intensity and looking for something that's not present, that at times we're so involved that we overlook the moments when that purity of being, of just being present and being open with what is a moment of true connection of metta, is just present. So to remember that there are moments like that, and to really focus on the good, allows us to flourish in a way that we reinforce the allowing of the open heart. We allow change to flow within ourselves. Change just by staying alive in each moment, welcoming each experience. And allow also that, in a way, everything is workable. There's nothing that is outside of our practice that is not workable. We can work with everything, because everything can be touched with kindness. That's the offering that we can give ourselves. I was practicing in Burma under the guidance of Upandita Sayado quite a number of years ago, and it was so interesting to see that when I had moments of real difficult emotions, I was in so much pain one day and had an interview with him and went in and just cried out. So there was no way that I could even report. And of course, facing Upandita Sayado, who was a monk, and me being a young woman, quite vulnerable, feeling really quite moved by what was happening within myself and not being able to share, I wasn't able to express any words. And yet, he just said one thing, which was a balm to my heart. And it was just that one phrase that he said, and then he made me leave the room. He said, when your heart hurts, just take the lap of the Buddha. Use the lap of the Buddha as an act of metta. The lap of the Buddha, or one's lap, whoever, but just use the capacity of just letting go, of letting be. And that was, in that moment, exactly what I needed to hear. Saying, to use the lap, it's just okay to feel that way. It's okay to feel pain. It doesn't need to be any other way right now in this moment. And metta in that way is a true healing. It really purifies the heart. But we can do that when we're truly listening to our heart. Ajahn Sumedho says, there's a very big difference between listening to our heart or following our heart. And that's exactly the distinction between love and desire. When we listen to our heart, we're open and we're, in a way, allowing what is there, what is present, this acceptance. In that moment in Burma, I needed to listen to my heart, and was able to take that lap of the Buddha. If I had followed my heart, I would have kept going into wanting something different than what was happening. And it's the same for us all. It's love or loving kindness when we really listen to our heart. And it is desire or attachment when we follow our heart, when we just let our heart, you know, follow its way through, and we don't know where it's going to lead us. It's a subtle distinction, but it's quite important. This is a poem from Rumi. It's called Love with No Object. There is a way of loving not attached to what is loved. Observe how water is with the ground, always moving toward the ocean. Though the ground tries to hold water's foot and not let it go. This is how we are with wine and beautiful food, wealth and power, or just a dried piece of bread we want and we get drunk with wanting. Then the headache and bitterness afterwards. Those prove that the attachment took hold and held you back. Now you proudly refuse help. My love is pure, you say. I have an intuitive union with God. I don't need anyone to show me how to be free. But this is not the case. A love with no object is a true love. All else, shadow without substance. Have you seen someone fall in love with his own shadow? That's what we've done. Leave partial love and find one that's whole. Where is someone who can do that? They're so rare, those hearts that carry the blessing and lavish it over everything. Hold out your beggar's robe and accept their generosity. Anything not coming from that will damage the cloth, like a sharp stone tearing your sincerity. Keep that intact and use clarity. Call it reason or discernment. You're here within you, a deciding force that knows what to receive, what to turn from. We have within ourselves a deciding force that knows what to receive and what to turn away from. And I think that's exactly what we're doing here. This deciding force that Rumi speaks of is that force of metta. It's that cultivation of loving kindness with no expectation. Just being at ease and relaxed, not holding on to anything that is pleasant, not pushing away the unpleasant. Welcome in the different experiences as the phrases flow through the vessel of one's heart and one's mind. Just letting the phrases flow in and allowing it. Being receptive. In a way, we hold our intention and then we just let the phrases do their job. This is the best that we could wish for ourselves, that we can wish for all living beings, actually. Doing the best we can is important, but just to hold it in the intention. Not to worry about getting a result, not to worry about the outcome. To worry will only bring more pain. It will only trouble the mind and insecure the heart. In that way, metta is a connection. When we can just feel what is happening, that connection is enough. It is just enough. And in a way, the world's suffering is so great because of that sense of separation, that sense of disconnection. If we're disconnected sometimes within ourselves, we can imagine that people are disconnected from other people. Here we're meeting ourselves this week. We're meeting the benefactor, the good friend, and we'll meet other beings, gentleness, kindness. And then we'll extend this loving field of metta to include all beings. But just as an intention, as a wish, not to make the world better. What happens is that with metta, we come to understand that whether we like it or not, somewhere or another, we all are connected just by the simple fact that we all wish to be happy. There's no human being that doesn't wish to be happy. And we all wish to find some place of refuge, some place where we can really feel free of pain, that we can be at peace. No matter who we are, no matter where we come from, there is that sense of wishing ourselves well. when we sense this feeling that we have this interconnectedness with all beings, there's a sense of gratitude for just being able to flourish in a way that we can use our time here to flourish that purity of heart and then connect with other beings that beauty of love. In that way, that love will be present and it pervades everything when it's present. It just manifests very naturally. And when we're faced with difficulties, well, we're just going to open to the problem, to the difficulty. That's how we can practice to benefit all beings. That way, we really have a sense that when we practice in this way, there's the boundless heart that doesn't leave anything out, and in a way that not even another being will be left out. And ourselves then become the offering. This is a quotation from the Dalai Lama that I'd like to share here. It's a short prayer that he chose, which he says gives him the greatest inspiration. He recites this prayer to himself every single day in his quest to benefit all beings. It's a prayer that comes from Shantideva, the great Indian saint of the 8th century. He says, "May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with oceans to cross, a bridge for those with rivers to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp